This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Justice and Peace. We shall close with this sports roundup. I am John Baptist Tumusime. On Tuesday evening, Pope Leo XIV visited the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls in Rome, where he, in accordance with the church law, took possession of the Basilica in his capacity as Bishop of Rome. Before celebrating Holy Mass, the Holy Father venerated the tomb of St. Paul the Apostle. He centered his homily on St. Paul and how he received his call to be an apostle, underlining that at the root of every vocation, God is present in his mercy and his goodness. Quoting St. Paul's letter to the Romans, he said Paul's encounter with Christ and his own ministry were the fruit of God's prior love, which called him to a new life while he was persecuting the church. Pope Leo XIV explained that God did not force St. Paul to convert, rather he left him with the freedom to choose, and the apostle chose an obedience to the faith that would prove costly and entail interior and exterior struggles which he faced willingly. From the example of St. Paul, the Pope added, we learn that salvation does not come about by magic, but by a mysterious interaction of grace and faith, by God's love, and by our trusting and free acceptance. The Pope invited the faithful to ask God to enable them to respond to his grace in the same way as St. Paul did. Before concluding his homily, the Holy Father expressed gratitude to the Benedictine monks to whom the Basilica has been entrusted for centuries, who take care of it. On Sunday evening, May 25th, Pope Leo XIV will take possession of the Basilica of St. John Lateran, which serves as the Cathedral of the Diocese of Rome. And a few hours after, he will proceed to the Basilica of St. Mary Major to take possession of it. The Center for Research in Religious Life and Apostolate has announced that it will hold its first symposium in Kenya's capital, Nairobi, from June 10th to 12th. The center was established in 2020 for Catholic religious sisters to engage in research as agents of evangelization so that the spread of the gospel and the challenges it faces are backed with data. The center is based in Nairobi and is jointly owned by the Association of Sisterhoods of Kenya, Tangaza University, and the Catholic University of Eastern Africa, on whose Nairobi campus are located its offices. The symposium will bring together researchers from various institutes of consecrated life and societies of apostolic life across the African continent, and collaborators from other continents who will share their experiences in their respective apostolates and ministries. Invited also is the Conrad Hilton Foundation, which provided the initial funds for establishing the center. The Association of Member Episcopal Conferences of Eastern Africa, AMESEA, has just concluded a 3-day training workshop in the capital of South Sudan, Juba. 17 people took part in the workshop. The objective of the training was to deepen their understanding of the country's constitutional review process, to build knowledge on constitutional reform, to identify areas for advocacy, and to highlight the Church's role in promoting justice and peace. Different speakers emphasized the importance of the Constitution in administering a country in an orderly and peaceful manner. Amesea has been accompanying South Sudan in peace building since 2018, when different fighting factions signed a peace agreement to end hostilities and to work together to transition the country to democratic rule. Reports from Uganda say the faithful from distant dioceses have begun their pilgrimage to the Uganda Martyrs Shrine in Namugongo to take part in the Feast of the Uganda Martyrs, which will be celebrated on June 3rd. The Uganda Catholic Bishops' Conference chose the Diocese of Lugazi to animate this year's celebrations. The diocese chose the theme, "O Lord, let me see again, I, your pilgrim of hope." The organizers expect more than 2 million faithful to be present at Namugongo on June 3rd. Pilgrims come from within Uganda, from neighboring countries, and beyond. The Faculty of Political Science of the Catholic University of Malawi has encouraged its graduates to apply for the United Nations Volunteers Program in order to acquire practical skills that will help them either to get employment there or to start their own private employment. An official of the faculty, James Lihoma, encouraged the graduates not to be discouraged when they find themselves without employment, but to try all means, including the United Nations, because international organizations are not out of reach. More than 40% of graduates in Malawi are unemployed. The Tigray People's Liberation Front in Ethiopia has called upon the African Union to mediate with the federal government after the Electoral Commission revoked its legal status as a party. The front is dominant in the Tigray region, from where it fought a bloody civil war with the federal government. The conflict killed tens of thousands of people and displaced millions. The fighting ended with the signing of a peace agreement mediated by the African Union and South Africa. The ban of the party follows months of political tensions within its leadership, which prevented it from holding a general assembly in time stipulated by the law. Political observers have warned that the ban could endanger the peace process. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Sudan's army chief has appointed the country's first prime minister since the civil war erupted there 2 years ago. The appointment of Kamil al-Taib Idris on Monday follows months of steady advances by the military against its rival Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF. Mr. al-Taib Idris will be tasked with forming the country's transitional government, a long-promised move by military chief General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, particularly after the army regained control of Khartoum in March and ousted the RSF from the capital. According to his social media profile, the new prime minister had previously worked as Sudan's legal advisor at its UN mission and is a member of the UN International Law Commission. The last prime minister, Abdallah Hamdok, resigned in 2022, during a political deadlock and widespread pro-democracy protests. The war in Sudan broke out in April 2023 when the military and the RSF turned against each other in a power struggle. At least 20,000 people have been killed and nearly 13 million people have fled their homes. Judges at the International Court of Justice ruled on Monday that Equatorial Guinea has a legal claim to a cluster of small islands in the Gulf of Guinea, settling a decades-long dispute with neighboring Gabon. In its final and binding ruling, the ICJ, also known as the World Court, sided with Equatorial Guinea and said its claim on the islands, based on a 1900 convention dividing up French and Spanish colonial assets in West Africa, should be honored. The dispute is over the tiny island of Mbanye and the two tiny nearby islands of Kokotie and Konga, which are potentially rich in oil. The ruling on Monday means Gabon will have to remove its soldiers from Mbanye, less than a kilometer long off the coast of Gabon. In 1972, Gabon's army drove Equatorial Guinea's soldiers from Banye and later set up its military presence on the virtually uninhabited island of just 74 acres or 30 hectares. The ICJ said the title that has the force of law insofar as it concerns sovereignty over the islands is a title held by the Kingdom of Spain on the 12th of October 1968, to which the Republic of Equatorial Guinea succeeded. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Justice and Peace. The President of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, has called upon African leaders and the entire public on the African continent to do whatever it takes to work for economic, political, and social self-independence. He made the call last week at the 12th edition of the Africa CEO Forum, which was held in the Ivorian city of Abidjan, under the theme, "Can a new deal between state and the private sector deliver the continent a winning hand?" Mr. Kagame noted that self-dependence should have started soon after independence. But this did not happen, and consequently, over the years, Africa has been depending on its former colonial masters and other rich countries to plan and to fund its development. This, he added, must come to an end.
We should have been building up the momentum in terms of what we need to do to make Africa self-dependent and resilient, and also in how Africa works with other continents and other countries. We always talk about potential of our continent, but when do we realize really what this potential is all about in reality? I think that has always been the question. And that comes back to us as a continent, as a people of this continent, to take the bull by its horns and deal with the problem. We can't keep depending on what others are saying or doing about us. We need to be working with each other and other countries on the global stage that offer what we need, and we as well offer what they need.
Giving examples, Mr. Kagame acknowledged that Africa has many development projects that need funding, but the traditional funders such as the United States of America, the European Union, and others are reorganizing their economies and priorities, and in the process cutting aid. He said African countries can fund their economies if their leaders do what is expected of them, and one way of breaking dependence is by involving the private sector and empower it to partner with the government in running the economies.
The continent is making progress. Where we are now is not where we were 30 years ago. But at the same time, we have to be brutally honest with ourselves, and we don't need to blame anybody else. We just need to do what we have to do. Because I believe we can do better, we can do more, and we can do many things together. And that will take us very far. It's about resources, it's about money, it's about what we do in terms of investment. We can't just appeal to the private sector to join with the public sector and do what we need to do without incentivizing the private sector. There is a lot government can do to create these incentives, and that's about regulation, it's about laws, it's about a secure environment, we talk about good governance, we talk about accountability. These are real things that matter. If we don't, we won't be making progress. There is a mentality out there, it's sort of a mindset in our continent, that somebody out there is going to foot the bill of our development. And that has undermined our effort to contribute as much as we can ourselves for our own development.
President Kagame expressed frustration over the unwillingness of some African leaders to implement what has been agreed upon at the continental level during the summits of the African Union. He said what is agreed upon is for the good of the individual member states, and failure to implement it often contributes to stagnation of development.
The systems are so bureaucratic that you imagine they live in another world, not this one that is so harsh to us that we need to be doing certain things certain ways without expecting that somebody will always be kind to us, and that's what we depend on almost forever. I'm saying this out of experience. I have lived in my country, and I see many other African countries go through that. On one hand, there is everything in our hands to do whatever we need to do and benefit from that. On the other, we are expecting that somebody else will come and do what we need for ourselves. How can this go on forever? We have the knowledge, we have the vision, we have resources, and we have organizations, we organize. Africa should be far ahead of where we are now.
The Africa CEO Forum is a platform that brings together multinational business companies, investors, and heads of state and government, as well as financial institutions in Africa, to exchange views and to suggest policies that can accelerate the economic transformation of the African continent. The two-day meeting in Ivory Coast was attended by 2,500 business leaders and public officials. In his speech, Mr. Kagame gave one particular example that continues to derail efforts to develop African countries.
We are actually our own problems. We export raw materials and then import finished products. We export talent and then get experts coming to give us all kinds of things. Why don't we retain this talent and let the talent do what we need them to do for ourselves?
With regard to peace, the Rwandan leader expressed concern over the many avoidable and resolvable conflicts that are currently taking place in Africa. He appreciated the efforts of key players from outside the continent for their input to end these conflicts, but stressed that African problems need African solutions because we Africans understand better our problems, their causes and effects, and therefore in a better position to find the right solutions.
If you look at what we've been doing on our continent, much progress has been made. I think we can't say nothing has been done, generally. I think Africans have come together. They have defined things and speak with one voice increasingly. There is significant progress. But most of these developments that have been happening in the last decade remind us that there are things we need to do that we haven't done. If you look at it at the African Union level, I remember when I was a champion of the reform process, there are things that were discussed on the continent. For example, the peace and security facility that was put in place. It was put in place to avoid being fully dependent on external funders, because that has been the case. In fact, this is similar to what happens in other areas in different countries. We find we depend so much on the external partners and forget ourselves to put in place what we really have to do and can do. In terms of peace and security, look at the whole continent. You find there are many trouble spots in different areas. All kinds of efforts going on, back and forth, succeeding in some places, not succeeding in others, and continued efforts going on. Again, these are some of the areas, because of the past and how we have handled our own affairs, that we are all of a sudden reminded that we can't do all things by ourselves and revert to these partners. In any case, even if we're able to do things ourselves, we still have to bring in partners who have what to offer. But we have, as Africa, to be able to define which direction you want to take and not entirely depend on what these people are contributing.
President Paul Kagame of Rwanda, speaking there last week at the 12th edition of the Africa CEO Forum in the Ivorian city of Abidjan. And that was Justice and Peace for this week.
This is a sports roundup and welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. South African sprinter Akani Simbine on Saturday continued his dominance in the United States when he surged to victory in the 100 meters at the Atlanta City Games, stopping the clock in 9.86 seconds. The time won't be recognized as the fastest of the year, given the fact that it was wind-aided, but that won't matter to the South African star. The South African Sports Confederation and Olympic Committee, SASCOC, said on its website that after winning both 100 meters Diamond League events this season, winning a medal at the World Indoors and anchoring Team South Africa gold in the 4x100 meters world relays, Simbine is unquestionably the fastest man on the planet right now. He started a bit slow but hit his stride at the 50-meter mark, well ahead of Nigerian Udodi Umzuzurike, who was second in 10.05 seconds. Also in action was men's 400 meters world record holder Wydad van Niekerk, who was marking his seasonal debut. He placed a credible third in the 200 meters in 20.03 seconds. Meantime, Nigerian sprint star Favour Ofili made history on Saturday by breaking the world record in the women's 150 meters at the 2025 Adidas Atlanta City Games, clocking an astonishing 15.85 seconds. At just 22 years old, Ofili became the first woman to ever run the 150 meters in under 16 seconds, smashing the previous record of 16.23 seconds set by Olympic champion Shona Mela Uibe of the Bahamas in 2018. Her performance headlined a strong Nigerian showing at the prestigious street meet, which brought together elite global athletes in a vibrant open-air setting. Also shining on the day was world record holder and 100 meters hurdles champion Toby Amusan, who finished second in her heat with a time of 12.53 seconds behind American Kenny Harrison, securing a place in the final. Amusan's run continues her steady build-up for the upcoming championship season, having already posted 12.74 seconds and 12.66 seconds in previous meets in Jiangmen and Kekwayo. As the world celebrates and welcomes the newly elected Pope, who has just been installed as the 267th successor of the Apostle Peter, the first Pope, the world of sports is excited to welcome this person that is largely described as a quiet intellectual giant. Leo XIV is actually said to be an avid, multi-talented sports person whom the media has quoted as describing himself as quite the amateur tennis player. To confirm his love for tennis, one of his first gestures as Pope was his meeting with world number one tennis player Yannick Sinner. Last week, the Italian tennis star gifted the Pope a tennis racket, which the tennis fraternity hopes he might put to use on the tennis court soon, at least on the tennis court inside the Vatican. Pope Leo is also good at playing an online-based word game known as Wordo. Those close to him have revealed the fact that he enjoys regularly playing this game with friends and his two brothers, Louis and John Prevost. Now, for those of you who may want to know, Wordo is a daily online word puzzle where players have six attempts to guess a five-letter word. Each guess provides some feedback in the form of colored tiles. A green tile means the letter is in the correct position, while a yellow tile means the letter is in the word but in the wrong position, and the gray tile means the letter is not in the secret word at all. The main objective of Wordo is to guess the daily secret five-letter word within six tries. Players type in a five-letter word and press enter to submit their games. After each guess, the tiles for the letters in your guess will change colors to indicate how close you were to the sacred word. A new sacred word is available each day, and once you solve the word, you can share your results with others. Pope Leo XIV is also said to be a lifelong supporter of the Chicago White Sox baseball team and has expressed support for the Villanova Wildcats men's basketball team. And in spite of his busy schedule, Pope Leo XIV has a lifestyle that is quite challenging, especially to those people that do not realize the importance of physical exercises. Since he moved to Rome a number of years ago, Cardinal Robert Prevost was frequenting one of the gymnasiums near the Vatican. This is according to his Italian personal trainer, who has spoken of his shock after learning his client for 2 years had been elected to be the new Pope. 26-year-old Valerio Marcella confessed the fact that the clergyman never turned up for a session dressed in his cardinal's cassock, but in plain ordinary clothes. He notes the fact that his client, Prevost, was always kind, never nervous or irritated, and describes him as a truly serene and balanced person. And on that note, we come to the end of today's edition of our Sports Roundup. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature Health and Healing and our segment on the Jubilee Year 2025. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.